Next Chapter Podcasts.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Michael Goodfriend, executive producer of the Play On podcasts. What Shakespeare is to theater, J.R.R. Tolkien is to fantasy. And I've got a podcast to recommend if you've ever wanted to read The Lord of the Rings or anything in Middle-earth, the Prancing Pony podcast. Every week, your hosts, Alan and Sean, explore the works of J.R.R. Tolkien, bringing along plenty of pop culture references, nerd humor, and a few bad puns. They cover a few pages each week, taking a deep dive into your favorite stories. And while longtime readers still learn from the Prancing Pony podcast, they're also very welcoming to newcomers. So, if you're ready to dive into the most beloved world in fantasy literature and become a part of a vibrant, active community of listeners, look for the Prancing Pony podcast wherever you listen.
Hi, my name is Michael Goodfriend, and I'm the executive producer of the Play On podcasts. Tracy Young is an accomplished theater director and playwright who began her writing career developing several original plays with the Actors Gang in Los Angeles, including the musicals Hysteria, which was an Ovation Award and Penn West finalist, Euphoria, which received the Ovation, LA Weekly, and Garland Awards, and A Fairy Tale, which received the Garland and Glad Image Awards. She co-created Medea Macbeth Cinderella with Bill Rausch, a simultaneous telling of Euripides' Medea, Shakespeare's Macbeth, and Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, which she calls her most challenging and joyful work to date. That is, until she took on the Play On podcast series, The Winter's Tale.
This is part two of my interview with Tracy Young.
So we've talked a ton on our bonus content series about Cornerstone, because so many artists have been affiliated with that, in the Play On podcasts. But we haven't talked a lot about the Actors Gang. Can you tell us what the Actors Gang is or was, and did that come before Cornerstone for you or after?
It came before. I grew up in LA, and there was a group of theater majors at UCLA, in the 80s. OMG, I think the 80s, right? Who were majoring in theater there, good theater program there. And one of the main actors in the Théâtre du Soleil, that's a French, well-known French theater company, came to do a masterclass, came to do kind of an intensive for a couple of weeks with that class of actors. And the Théâtre du Soleil centers their work on Commedia dell'arte style of performance, which is a very presentational style. It's kind of like street theater. It's got a sort of immediacy. It was a lot of traveling troupes who would travel around town to town and kind of set up a rough stage and then improvise scenarios based on stock characters, but kind of a lot of improv, a lot of comedic improv and interaction with the audience, sort of a very not fourth wall kind of a form. And so this, so Georges Bigot from the Théâtre du Soleil came and did this intensive work with this group, and they all loved it so much that when they graduated, they decided that they wanted to kind of create a company that would focus and continue that work. And that became the Actors Gang. And specifically, Tim Robbins was one of the, you know, early in his sort of acting career, he would work television and film gigs, and then he would take some of that money and put it into renting a warehouse space in downtown Los Angeles, industrial district. And we would all go down there and, you know, rifle through big boxes of costumes and things, and just for its own sake, kind of do this commedia work, do these improvised workshops for an evening, you know, a couple times a week. And out of that came plays, eventually got developed and presented and so on and so forth. So that's how that company kind of started. And it's really been the engine of that company all these many years. And the company still exists. They work out of a space in Culver City in Los Angeles now. And so, yes, as you say, many people have kind of traveled through that company over the years. It's been around for a long time. And I was through my friend Cynthia Ettinger, another wonderful actor. She brought me into, you know, come on down and do some of this workshopping we're doing every week, you know, to play. And it sounded really fun and I loved it. And the form really spoke to me. And so that's how I got involved in that. And that grew into, once the company got sort of a permanent space, it was a very straight, white, male-driven company. A lot of, you know, a lot of sort of straight dude energy in that company. Very muscular, physical, dude bro sensibility, which was both, you know, exciting and really physical and fun when we were, you know, young and at that age, and, you know, rough on anybody who wasn't that in some ways. So like I ended up being one of the first female, you know, directors to do stuff. So that's kind of, that was good and hard. And that was kind of like my schooling. I didn't go to college during those years. I was running my, you know, a catering company.
And I probably worked like for that, you.
Working on music videos during the MTV era. But that was really my learn by doing kind of thing.
And you feel like while you were there, you were able to shift the dynamic a little bit just through your work as a director?
Yeah,
or did it end up causing a rift?
I think that I, among others, you know, it just, the thing was its own living, breathing entity, you know, and the people who would come in and be there for a while would, of course, the dynamic and the sort of whole ethos would evolve and breathe with the people who were involved. So I was one of those people. The first play that I created with an ensemble of actors was this play called Hysteria that was all about kind of the rise of the Western male dominated medical profession and the sort of discrediting of midwives that happened in the, you know, in the early 19th century, as that was kind of solidifying in the Industrial Revolution time, medicine as a profession, you know, that was populated by then men who be doctors and women who were patients, you know, and let's remove her ovaries because she's hysterical. You know, she's being, you know, whatever, all that sort of hyper misogyny that came about as a result of that. So that was a very, I thought, a rich subject for exploration in the commedia form. And it became this kind of musical about midwifery, and we were living in kind of the era of the supermodels in the 90s. So there was a lot of like body issue propaganda, you know, in the media for women, you know, a lot of like a lot of body tyranny, right, around physical beauty. And so those two, so the play kind of touched on all that. And it was, to me, a very sort of themes that were both women-centered, but also very much in keeping with the kind of high-rev, kind of hyper-stakes-driven aspect of the commedia form. Anyway, and it was funny with music, whatever. So out of that, you know, yeah, I think that that's the play was successful and, you know, got some notice and it was good. And I think that shifted some of the dynamics of the company. Definitely more women were directing, much more LGBTQ presence within the company membership came about during that time. And so, you know, it evolved. And then, you know, there was another era where I and a bunch of others sort of departed the company and the company kind of reformed, and some of the original members are still with the company, but the company also brought in a whole new sort of group of other people and it evolved after that. So of course the company's going to really reflect still, you know, the ethos of what it originally started as, and it still does, but it also evolved with the people because that's what company's all about. Right. So,
sure.
And you know, OSF's going through that similar, you know, shift too, right? The eras of the different artistic directors that have led that company, I think, have had a profound shaping of what that company is and becomes, and what its focus artistically is, and the plays it wants to present, and all of that. And, you know, so that's a cool thing that you get to see over time with companies that keep going for that long.
I hope you're enjoying this conversation with the creatives behind the scenes. To listen to the full interview, join the Play On supporting cast for just $5 a month, which by the time you hear this might be less than you'll pay for a gallon of gas. You'll get in-depth interviews featuring some of the most brilliant artists working today. You'll also enjoy ad-free episodes of the Play On podcast series. Subscribe today for $5 a month. Join the cast. Go to ncpodcast.com and sign up today. Thanks for listening.
Hello, Ariel. Did you want to listen in on me and Rock enjoying ourselves?
Don't encourage.
Should I describe to you what we're doing right now?
Picasso? Huh? What's going on?
Let's see. Look, these wind shells document anything you do in order to banish the spirits.
I don't banish spirits. I'm fixing the tango.
Of course, we can't open a new hole into the aether web every year.
But spirits aren't always bad.
Those are exactly the reason tangoweeds happened in the first place.
I'm sure Raka knows how to get through a water gate without disrupting the magic balance.
So what happens when there's a hole in the weave? Does magic pour out?
It is already broken. Let more of air into this world. I'll destroy one of them.
You've fed enough already.
I will kill you, you filthy little...
Whoa, calm down, Raka.
Try it, Feather Duster.
God, ferocious rune master. Your friction will grind the weave a twain.
Hjarta. In moments like these, I wish I could see the runes.
What's wrong, Raka? Is that tangleweave maybe too difficult even for someone as great as you?
Counterbalance, a high fantasy audio drama. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts from.
Next Chapter Podcasts.